Bahnman. Maria is a very constant contributor to the conference. She has been here. She's here for the fourth time now, I think. Third time, okay. And with very different things, with talks, with a piece in the concert last year, and with a workshop, I think, 2 years ago. And next year, she will be one of the main organizers of the conference at the Technical University in Berlin. And now we have a talk about extension of your wave field synthesis program. Thank you very much, Maria.
Thank you very much. Yes, I will present today the software I've been working on in the last year, besides the normal Wonder software. And this is part of my PhD research that I do at the Technische Universität of Berlin. That research is about how to oralize the sound of 3D objects with wave field synthesis. So I think we can do a short overview. I'll give a short introduction again into what is wave field synthesis and about the different kinds of sound sources that you can oralize with it. And then I go on to the implementation of the software. I say a few words about the first test and the problems that came up, and then about future work. So we start with an introduction of the... Next slide. Okay, so wave field synthesis. It's based on the principle of Huygens. Christian Huygens was a Dutch physicist who, near the end of the 17th century, made a theory about how waves propagate in space. This was not only acoustic waves, but also optical waves. And he stated that if you have a sound source or a source which emits waves, that you could imagine on one of the wavefronts, there's a lot of small sources, as we see in the next slide. Which all emit waves, and then the waves from these smaller sources add up to the next wavefront. And this is, in fact, the principle which has been, which is used by wave field synthesis. We take a straight line of speakers, as we see on the next slide. We take a straight line of speakers, we do some computation for the delay and amplitude of the sound source of the audio, and then with a linear array of speakers we can recreate every wave field we want. So we can put the sound source as shown in the picture, but we could also move it around to get moving sound sources and sound sources in different places. In the next slide we see actually, in wave field synthesis, you just have the speakers, but the wave field will be the same as if there was like a real source on this location. One of the advantages of this technique is that you have a large listening area. Most other spatial audio systems have a very limited sweet spot where it sounds great, but if you move around, for example, if you're late for a concert and you have to sit on the side, it's not as good. So that's something that wave field synthesis can solve. Of course, at the cost of having a very large system, you need a lot of speakers, computation power, but these are things which in some cases can be managed, and there's an advantage to use wave field synthesis. Okay, then there are different kinds of sources that we can recreate with wave field synthesis, which are currently implemented both in the open source software Wonder, as well as in some commercial software that is available. You can have a virtual point source, which is basically just one point where the source is located and it emits its sound in all directions equally. Then you can have a plane wave, which is an ideal version of a sound source, which is infinitely far away. So you can't really pinpoint how far the wave is, but you hear the general direction. from which it comes. And one special case is when you move a voice source in front of the array, in which case you get first from the loudspeakers the sound waves will converge to one point, and from there diverge again. And then, if you're not in between the loudspeakers and the sound source, but in the other part of the listening area, it will really sound as if the sound source is actually in front of the speakers. So let me go on to the next slide. So my motivation for looking at 3D objects is that you sometimes want to have like the impression of having a large sounding object and get a proper reproduction of that. There have been several kind of ad hoc solutions for doing this. There's been a proposal to use like virtual panning spots, so you create like two point sources and you create a panning. So actually using a stereo technique, you have to pan between these two virtual sources to get like a broader image of the source. Then there's a method to use like multiple point sources for one object. For example, if you have like a grand piano, you could use like five point sources and it creates or something around that to create a larger image of the source. And in the last years, also some other groups have started looking into radiation characteristics of sound sources and how to reproduce those, which is also an interesting approach, but I chose to really look, okay, what happens if I have a three-dimensional object, I know what it looks like, I know its geometry, and and we know how it vibrates on the surface. What will then be the what do I then have to do with the wave synthesis? How can I organize this? And I make one further assumption in my source model, mostly for practical application, is that I have a source signal, which could be like an audio track or something I play live. And then I have a filtering function defined for each point on the surface, which then has a certain frequency spectrum and it depends on where the surface it is. So we go to the next. Okay, there have been several topics that I had to look at from a theoretical aspect. One about which I don't have a slide is that I need to make a discretization of the sound source itself, so I need to find out how many points should I actually sample on the sound source. I've written another paper which is referenced in the paper for here about that. And the second thing was that I needed to look at what do I do with the points of the source which are not in the horizontal plane. Because the normal WFS theory only takes into account sound sources which are in the horizontal plane, so in the same plane as the loudspeaker array. And if you want to do three-dimensional objects, you need to look, okay, what do I have to do, or what happens if I have a point which is outside of this horizontal plane? Because you want to know how these points contribute to the sound which you hear at a certain point in the listening area. So I made a slight adaptation of the WFS driving function. I have some pictures in the next slide. Just I don't want to bother you with all the math that is behind this. Just want to point out roughly what happens. Like in the derivation for wave synthesis operator, you have to integrate along this line M, and the main issue there for this integration is that you have to find a certain stationary point. Now, for points that lie in the horizontal plane, the stationary point is exactly on the speaker, on the speaker line. For an elevated point, which we see in the next, in the right picture, this stationary point will be slightly elevated. So this is actually something where we locate an error, and still have to do research how serious this error is exactly in practical situations. But there will be one, and the calculation of the delay and attenuation, I have to work with this stationary point instead of the one for the horizontal case. Then we go on to the next slide. Okay, then we get to the implementation. Just a general design, 3D models, this is just an overview. You probably have read it by now, so continue. Okay, the design for the program is sort of you have a project where you modify different objects. Objects are represented by a mesh of points. It's just from the geometry of the object, and for each vertex, for each point of the object, I have a filter, or I can define a filter. And then the objects can have different locations in space. And this is not just like a position in space, but you also have to then take into account its orientation in space, so the rotation, and there's also the scaling factor. Of course, in the graphical visualization mode, there's already a lot of software available and libraries to work with 3D geometry data. So I did I looked into a couple of those, and also for viewers to see which ones I would use. Using the open source paradigm. So there's the GTS library, the GNU-triangulated service library. Then there's a program called MView. There's another program called GayomView. Then there's from India a view called MEdit. My criteria were that it had to be open source, and it should be easily extendable for my purposes. And the main thing was there that I should be able to identify vertex points so that I could add the filter information to it. From these four, the India MLS is not open source, so I didn't look further at that. The next slide. The GeoView has a very easy way to have external control. So, and it's widely available, I believe, in various Linux distributions, so it's a very easy thing to install. MView was interesting for me because it's also written using the Qt libraries, which I'm also using for my graphical interface. It was very easy to integrate for me. And also the mathematical, the geometry data was handled there quite transparently, and I could easily extend this for what I was doing. GTS also has a lot of interesting functions, but I couldn't really figure out the most key stuff. To adapt it to make the vertex points identifiable, so I didn't really use it. I looked at a couple of things from there to adapt certain algorithms of that, but I'm not really using it. Let me go to the next slide. Okay, for the wavelet synthesis calculation, then for each object that I transform the mesh, so it's at a location and then has the orientation that I defined. And then for each point and for each speaker that I have in my loudspeaker area, I do a visibility check. I calculate the stationary points, then I can calculate the delay and attenuation. Then I can do a convolution with the filter, and then the results are saved to disk. This visibility or audibility check is came from the consideration, okay, some points of the object will be on the backside of the object. So if I have a certain speaker, certain points have no direct sound path to the speaker. So I created a simple algorithm to check that. I calculate the line segment between the point on the object and the server. I see whether this line crosses with any of the surfaces, and if it crosses, then the point is not visible. What I'm neglecting here is diffraction of sound waves around the object. This also turned out to be one of the problems I have to solve. Then I implement a simple algorithm to refine the surface, because I want to, discretization problems, I would like to have it as fine as possible. So I created a mid-vertex insertion method where if I have a triangle, I just divide it at 3 points so that I have then 4 triangles which are smaller. And then, in the next slide, I have to see, okay, what kind of filters will the ones the new points have. So I have to make an average of the neighboring points, and I have to sort of weigh the, how the neighboring points, how much they contribute to the resulting filter. And there I'm using a kind of inverse distance weighting method, so that the points that are closest will have the most influence, and the points that are further away will have less influence on the resulting filter. So that's one side, and then next, the filters are stored in a kind of breakpoint format. So I have to, if I have 2 filters which have breakpoints at different points, I have to add breakpoints in the resulting, or I have to find a breakpoint which corresponds to the other filter breakpoint, and then take the average. So you get something like this. There we go, on to the next one. Okay, then I. The software, there's 2 parts. There's a graphical user interface where you can define a project and do the calculations of filters. And then I have a second program, a command line program, to actually use this project to control the engine and have a kind of real-time viewer. And that program is controllable with on-sound control. And actually most of the common functions have been put into a library, so if someone wants another kind of interface to it, it's easy to implement. Then we go to some screenshots. Still, on the left is like the main program view, where you, at the top you have some general settings for the project. You can put the name, you have to tell us which loudspeaker array it uses. That I'm using the same file format as the Wonder software, so you can define your array there. Then you have to specify a project folder, how many objects you have you can load a mesh file which represents your object. Then in the object view, which is basically just this empty program encapsulated, so I'm just using the functionality that was there. And then, so you can see the object, you can move it around and look at all sides. Then you can define filters. I'll go into this in more detail. There's a refine button which then just refines this one step. You can do it multiple times until this A is the frequency that you see as something that you think, well, that should work. There's a kind of interaction between the viewer and the selected vertex point. So you can click on the viewer, if you choose the pick option there, you can click on that and then you'll see which surface you're actually editing for the filters. And then the last part is you can define the positions, the various positions. It's also possible to create those with some other program where you create an algorithm, give you a lot of positions and then load this file into here. And then there's a button where you can do save filters for all objects and then it does the whole calculation. And if you've done a lot of refinements, there's a nice progress bar to make that this takes longer. The next few. Okay, this is the filter definition dialog. So at the top I see which point or node or vertex you're editing. You see the coordinates go that you can just click in the space where your breakpoints are. Then you can store it and you can copy it to other nodes or you can copy it from other nodes. So this is how, and it's, the upper one is magnitude, the lower one is space, so you can edit the whole filter. This is the kind of scene overview you can get with the young view, which is just it started from my program and then I'm sending commands to it via standard in, standard out interface. So there we have our loudspeaker array, we have the object, and if we're using the engine or during editing, we can also see the object move around when we shoot. The engine is controlled via OSC. There's start-stop messages can be sent to start and stop the engine. You can load the project. You can change the location of an object. You can mute the object. You can tell it who you are, so it can send messages back, which is important for the kind of info messages you can send. You can ask it, is the renderer running? Or what is the status of the renderer? You can ask which project is loaded. You can ask information, then you can ask information about certain objects, how many locations they have, which they are at the moment. And then you can get information on all locations. There's commands to start the viewer and open different views of the viewer. There's a verbose message if you want to see what the program is actually doing. You can get some more information and you can quit the program. I did some first tests to see if this method actually gives interesting results. This is the 24 speaker prototype setup that we have at the Team Berlin. I didn't do actually proper like listening tests or anything, just a small demo during one of research colloquiums, and the general impression was that it gives like really strong spatial impression of the sound source. There is really a problem with the fact that I'm getting diffraction around the object. That I will elaborate in the next slide what happens there. So if I have like my sound source, then for a number of speakers, that's the little squares represent speakers here, the point P will not be visible. So. But for the gray shaded speakers, the point P is visible, so they will reproduce the sound from point P. But then I get at the speaker level, it sort of diffracts around this corner, so the sound will actually be coming from those speakers and arrive also in the parts where, if you would really neglect diffraction, you should not hear the source, but you do, but you get like a wrong impression. It comes like totally from the wrong side of the field. So I think then I come to conclusions in the next slide. So my future work will be to look into this diffraction problem, see if I can find a method to either to implement it or work around it, or that's what I have to look at. Then I have to do serious listening tests on certain things, like what kind of discretization is required, how large can the objects be, like in vertical sense, before it doesn't make sense anymore. And I have to do some usability tests by letting composers use the program, see if I have to change the user interface or want to see what kind of things they would want to do with it. And in the future, I will also do a release of the source source. The URL should be known from last year. So that's it.
Great.
Show this, but the resolution with the viewing is very bad. So the program is written on a 1024, like larger resolution than the one the viewer gives me here, the projector gives me. I just wanted to show here you have the object viewer. You can click on this. You should actually turn the object a bit. You can turn it around. Then you can select a certain surface. Then here you will see the current which triangle you've chosen and the different points which are there. Then if I click here, I directly go to node 2 and I can edit the filter for that. Here is the viewing jump view of the whole scene. But unfortunately I can't get to my location part where if I was change the location you see it move around. Okay,
thank you very much, Marije. Are there any questions? Yes.
Jeff Beasley, Australia, Maria. The purpose of the filters, is that to aid in spatialization or is it for what reason is the filters applied?
Okay, the idea is that as an object vibrates, not every point on the surface of the object will do this in the same way. So they will all have like a slightly different frequency spectrum. And this is also a link I still have to make or get one of the students to work on. is to work with light physical modeling techniques to calculate these vibrations of the object. So you don't have to define it by this dialogue, but you can calculate it through model program and then use this for defining those filters.
I would think structures.
Yeah, but I mean, you could also use like kind of, which would be less physical in a sense, but interesting maybe from a compositional point of view to algorithmically create like certain kinds of filters.
Another question?
Yes.
Hi, I'm Rolf Gassner from Volkswagen, Germany. I'm not quite sure, Mariah, whether I understood the goal of your application. It seems to me like you're modeling obstacles and put it in the virtual space. So the sound source is outside of the obstacle and these objects are calculated as reflecting the sound. So
that might actually be a spin-off in the end when I figured out this diffusion stuff. But the idea is really to have like a three-dimensional sound source which is sounding.
So the object itself produces the sound?
Yeah.
Okay.
What I was wondering is how does it actually sound? I mean, we all have experienced that the recording, say, of a truck is not as physical as the actual truck because you have a huge engine that actually sounds over a large area, which gives it a lot more bodily power to as opposed to a recording from a point source. But how does it actually sound when you have, like you have a cylinder or something, and you rotate it? Is that something that is actually audible? I mean, do I really form a mental image that this is a sounding, moving cylinder, or is it just, oh well, that's cool, that's weird?
Well, I think it depends a bit on how the actual cylinder is working, but is vibrating, but if there's a clear difference between what it like does at the front here and what it does at the back, for example, if it would be like a tube model, which mainly emits sound in one direction, then you would quite clearly hear when it's moved. I mean, normally you can hear if someone's talking with the face to you or with the back to you.
Sure.
So there's a clear difference in.
Yes, but that's basically a point source, and there is a when I talk and I move my head away, I think that could be thought of as a point source and some object in the way. But maybe I misunderstood. But what I thought is when you showed this vertex model of like a ball of made of triangles, that this thing was basically like a balloon. Growing in size and shrinking in size and thus producing a sound wave? Or is it out of phase things? And
It's doing out of phase things as well.
Oh, scary.
But I mean, that's very much definable at the moment, so I mean, okay. What kind of filters you're using for each point. But you can also get an impression of the size of the object. I mean, the object is very large and vibrates differently from each point. There's a clear difference between just a point source and the radiation characteristic because you're still very close to the object. You can't like model it yet with a point source with the radiation characteristic.
Another question?
Ito Bukvich from United States. Question regarding these points. So I'm also trying to understand completely how it works. It looks very fascinating. But do these points also accommodate for sympathetic vibrations? In other words, if they're interconnected as a geometrical shape, does that mean that when one point is emanating particular energy, whatever it is, through these filters, that is somehow transferred to other points on the object?
That's actually something that's to some extent can be modeled with these filters, mm-hmm. as a kind of impulse response way. On the other hand, because of this basic assumption I made, that they are like not, that the source of the sound is independent of the filtering of the object. And they are making a certain kind of assumption which, if it's like, yeah, non-linear interactions between different points, which physically you will actually have. So there are an assumption which may not be practical for all kinds of modeling. I mean, if you have like model synthesis, that's often there is this or at least with models, there is this interdependency between points which cannot be approached by this model.
Question? Jeff Beasley, Australia again. You've got, there's a 25 in the array here, 24 or 25 drivers yeah. in the array. Is that, for this to function as a model, is it necessary to have that many? Is that a function of the design of it, that you need so many drivers? Because it, could you conceivably use, say, half and create a similar effect, or do you need to have that many drivers for it to function?
That's actually the wavelet synthesis in general. There's a requirement, or there's a problem of spatial aliasing, which depends on how far your speakers are apart. And if they're further apart, you get spatial aliasing at a lower frequency. So you want to have as many speakers as possible, as close to each other as possible.
And in terms of size, are they all identical in size? Or?
Yes, they are. Yeah.
So by their nature, they need to be, wouldn't they, I suppose? Is that why you need the filter, in part, to be able to contour? So I'm just trying to model it in my mind. I mean, it would be... I could see that you could do some remarkable things with it, but it's, you know, it looks to me like you've created a monster. You know, but it's, how would you actually apply this? You know, it's such a big job. You know, what do you do with what you know with driver number 9? You see, like that. How would you, in terms of the filters? Do you use? What are they, bandpass filters, or are they a multiplicity of filter types? And if so, how would you know to construct it? Is this, in other words, is it based on the idea that you want to create an effect of a particular instrument in a particular environment at a particular point, or is it just completely open? You know? Does that make any sense?
The number of speakers is really like, yeah, wavelet synthesis is more or less when I was using a lot of speakers. Yeah. I can show it. I should have a picture of it. Prototype. But this is the prototype set up in the studio in Berlin. So we have like 24 speakers, which are driven by one computer. This hardware problem of having the need for many single addressable speaker channels is something that some loudspeaker manufacturers have taken up and started to develop panels where you have like 8 loudspeakers in one box, and also amplifier built in, so you just have to put in an ADAT cable and you have your 8 speakers. So.
Thank you.
Okay, I guess that's what we're going to ask any questions. Marie, maybe you might like to tell us a few words about the huge WFS system you are currently building and the TU.
Yes. There are very concrete plans at the TU Berlin to create a wavefield synthesis system in one of the auditoria there, which will be a system with, according to the last design, was 896 loudspeaker channels. surrounding the whole auditorium, so it's like a ring, like on all walls there will be speakers surrounding the auditorium, and this will be then be driven by a cluster of around 16 PCs to render all the audio for it, and it will be the job of Wonder, or is further Wonder will be further developed to make this possible. So it will be divided up in several parts, like a render engine which will run on each of the 16 computers to compute this. Control units, to separate the graphical interface more, to make this possible. And it was also one of the reasons to get the Liebherr's audio conference to Berlin. So there have been many questions in the last year as well. We would like to hear this wavefield synthesis. 3 years ago, we brought the prototype system here. But for next year, we'll bring the conference to the
Right, so I think it was a good last word. So thank you very much again, Marije. And we will have now a break of 2 hours, and the concert starts at 8 o'clock in the Kubus tonight. Thank you.
Okay, I have just one question. There was at least one request to maybe do a kind of workshop about Wonder. So I'm just wondering whether more people would be interested in this, or whether I could just do some private question and answer session.
Okay, wonderful. That is a very good point to emphasize again. And we have lists on the info desk with all the workshops. And please register if you want to attend the workshop, because there is usually limited space, so about 10 people maybe can attend one workshop. It's also possible to register a new workshop. So if you have a spontaneous idea, you want to collect some people, or you do some rehearsal for a contribution to the sound night on Saturday or whatever, just ask at the info desk. Okay, so thanks again a lot, and see you at 8 o'clock.